Blog Talk Radio.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC radio network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures, and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
Well, we're definitely taking it away now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, just to say congratulations, we are at, and we are in the 200th show of our revisioned, and yes,
wow.
Yes, this is a biggie. We're almost at our year anniversary, which is kind of awe-inspiring, if you ask me, because, I mean,
wow,
it seems like we've been chugging along and there's no linear time construct. So... But anyway, so
wow.
It seems
wow.
That
yeah.
we're kind of moving into a new dimension, as we will be getting, you know, after this month we do our planning session for, you know, the next chunk of time. So it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. So this month we are in a specific category now. We're basically looking at the idea of gods, angels, and other inspiration as our topic for this month. And tonight, we are basically, and it's a very exciting topic, actually, is Aether, primordial god of brightness in the upper sky. And, of course, technically, this is a Greek version, and then there's, you know, other versions that come along that hold that, as I was discussing with Deb before the show. But before we dive into that, we need to kind of catch up with our weekly what has happened in our world. I can say one thing. I can be firmly stating that we are without having had a tornado or any severe weather. Heard that knock on wood routine.
Oh.
So on my end.
That's
but
nice.
It is. And it's really interesting is I was looking and, you know, through news feeds and stuff. Detroit had a tornado that hit this last week. Yes. And I've been having conversations with different people. And one of the ladies that I have as a person in my actual real world life here is talking about, you know, the number of tornadoes that have come down specifically in the United States. We're looking at that as, you know, terminology.
Oh, yeah.
And she's saying, you know, that it is, you know, it's outrageous the amount of tornadoes that have hit and touched down and in places that have not really had tornadoes. And so we kind of went into a little conversation, and I'm going to share that mostly because that's the high point of my whole experience. I mean, the rest of it is, you know, like having time with my granddaughter and, you know, getting through the different humps of, you know, a week where we are trying to get back to what is considered a reasonable normal. But this woman and I talked about it. She says, you know, there's so much anger out there, and the anger, which is energy, is infusing those tornadoes or the severe weather that we're having, whatever that may be. And right now with the tornadoes, and I thought about that, and, I mean, we are going to talk about ether, and, you know, that's about an energy as well as a deity. That was fascinating as a way to look at what normally would happen is this energy situation that would happen as a climate event. And yet because of the amount of other energy that's swirling around from everybody, you know, just hanging out there, swirling around, it gets attracted and it kind of swirls into this thing. And I thought, wow, that was, you know, kind of a inspiring and yet frightening point of reference because, you know, when you think about, we're talking about energy, we talk about deities, we talk about things on this show, that in itself kind of makes you go, we really need to have vibrational energies that rise above the energies of anger and frustration and hatred and all of that. It's and certainly, you know, light and love and all that is part of the movements that have been countering it for a long time. But it just, it's almost like, I don't think about it as, you know, oh, just climate change due to whatever we're doing onto the physical world, you know, like things that we do. But mostly it's what we're doing on an energetic level, and it's frightening. And yet in doing it that way, it kind of means you, I, other people who work in the realm of spirit and energies of this sort, we actually do have the ability to help connect and shift, just like I saw with what happened here after the devastation of what, you know, the tornado. And people put things aside, and they've been helping, and they've been clearing. And, you know, things that even in the time of seeing the fires and the earthquakes that have happened in California, put things aside. They became a community as opposed to separate identities of thought patterns and attitudes. And on that, which is profound and yet I don't want to stay negative, I will turn it to you and see what your week has been like.
Sure. A lot of angry wind blowing around, that's for sure.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, but I'm, I feel like I'm a little punchy, so I might start, like, randomly giggling for no good reason at all.
Okay.
I am really enjoying the longer days of sunshine and feeling very much in transition. Like, today was, for the kids right around here, or my grandkids, today was their last day of school. And so, like, now I feel like summer is officially starting. But, you know, kind of on that note of what you were talking about, I'm really enjoying the days being longer and more light. But we've also had a number of crazy rainstorms. No tornadoes recently. I think I'm kind of lucky because I'm right off of Lake Michigan, and so a lot of times if we have tornadoes coming our way, they kind of end up bursting over the lake. Something that's interesting that I recently heard that relates to what you were talking about is I heard an astrologer talking on the show, and he was saying that since the total solar eclipse on April 8th, he's tracked a pattern of increased storming along the route or the path of totality across the U.S. And so it's just like, wow, I just thought, how bizarre, you know? And so I'm, because I just heard that like a day or two ago. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to start paying attention to that. Because, he said that he was tracking that. And, I've noticed that there have been a lot of tornadoes and a lot of extra storms that seem to be going on, but I haven't really paid attention to, like, exactly where they are and stuff like that. So I just thought that was an interesting phenomena. And then I would say one of the things that I just really enjoyed a day or two ago is I visited a graveyard with my sister, Sharon. And I felt really called or really pulled to this little graveyard, kind of lost in the middle of the urban sprawl. And it's kind of like a small forgotten cemetery that's not too far from me, but it's nestled between a couple of strip malls and the interstate. And, you know, I was always aware of that little graveyard, but I never went there. But recently I really felt a pull to go there, and I felt like there was a lot of forgotten people there. And it was such a interesting contrast going there, because there was like, you know, it's totally urban all around it. There's shop, you know, the shopping centers, the traffic, the, you know, fast food restaurants and all that stuff. And then you go into this little graveyard, and it's like shift like almost into a whole different world. And it's like quiet in the middle of all this chaos. And it felt really, really sacred, and just, it had a really good feeling to it. And I felt like, oh, I was meant to be here. Because usually, I actually had to do some graveyard work, which I ended up doing. But I, you know, I usually go to other cemeteries, you know, to family, ancestor graves and stuff. And that's where I do, you know, the majority of the, my sort of graveyard work and stuff. But I really, really liked this one, and I felt like the gatekeeper to that graveyard was calling for someone to them or to pay attention. And you know, it's kind of funny, like I'm just trying to read, like, the oldest grave there, I think it's 1850. And I read, like, there was like two little blurbs that people had written. One was a tourist guide who had visited this little cemetery, and he wrote a thing. And then there was another person that wrote a little blurb about this cemetery. And they stated in their thing that the oldest grave belonged to someone named Rue Somps. So I'm walking around this little graveyard looking for Rue Somps. And anyway, I did find a headstone with Rue Somps on it, and I looked up to it, and that one also had Rue Somps on it. And so I'm like, what? This can't be a headstone for the same two people, or two people with the same name right next to each other. That would be kind of weird. So anyway, I looked it up. Rue, it's like R-U-H-E, and then S-A-N-S-T. And so what it is it's not a name at all, but it translates to rest in peace in German. And I just thought, oh, I thought, okay. You know, I don't know exactly who the guardian is, but I'm going to call him Rue Somps.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. And then it felt very okay.
Well, that's great.
I felt like that was accepted. Yeah.
Well, you become another guardian for some, you know, a sacred space. Sometimes it could be that, and it could be something else, you know, a garden or something that is left unattended or untended. And I think maybe that's the energy that not only is part of your personal work, but it's also very interesting because when we talk about ether, we're talking about a larger energy that is all pervasive and, you know, spirit. All pervasive from that. It holds words like akasha and ether and spirit. And, you know, of course, those terms taken and given, you know, their definitions can be a little bit different. But ultimately, it's very primordial. It's very, you know, from the original level of something. So it's a physical manifestation of that with people being buried there and their spirit energy that is of hovering or off doing their own thing, but in some connection they're there. So, so let's get into our topic because our time goes so fast. So when we talk about aether as a primordial deity, primordial deities are what we call first generations of gods and goddesses, and basically representing fundamental forces, physical foundations of the world, and actually not actively worshipped for the, you know, the most part, because they're not given human characteristics. They're just these big nebulous things. And obviously, instead of, you know, sometimes they do get personified, like we've talked about Gaia, And, you know, to a certain extent, ether has a little bit there. But, you know, basically the fact that they're personifications of places or abstract concepts and then taken out and then given sometimes a little bit more human characteristics or personalities. And, you know, we've talked, you know, we have four seasons and four cardinal directions and, you know, things of that nature. And, I mean, you know, even, it's interesting, even Christianity has taken and personified a particular energy pattern of victory, and they've called her Victoria or Nike. So, you know, giving personal characteristics is something that gives us a connection to this bigger thing out there that's so general that we, you know, kind of look at it and kind of take an in-breath and forget to go, oh, take an out-breath, you know, that kind of thing, 'cause it's so big. But his background, and of course they've kind of given him a male energy, and of course we have a lot of different sources for what happened or why this deity was brought, you know, was in manifested in the way it has. And Hesiod, of course, has used the idea that the parents of ether are Erebus, which is darkness, and Nyx, which is night. And yet we can go with Orphic energy of, you know, Orphic description, and that's just Kronos, father time, okay? And, you know, kind of going on down the road, we have siblings. So Hesiod says, well, Hemera is day, personification of dawn, day. And then you have, you know, again, the Orphic is basically chaos and Erebus, darkness. So, you know, there's, again, a changing of positions of these situations. And then you have from there, you kind of go to what are the offspring of ether? And, of course, there is basically kind of goes into Hesiod, kind of works with, well, he has, is basically Nyx, is night, okay? And so he kind of gives that off to that one. And then, you know, his, theogony is that he has, he's basically, he's the brother of Hemera, day and dawn. So, you know, kind of like giving, they're giving different positions, whether they're a brother or they're an offspring, son, daughter, again, giving, you know, unions of that. But it's interesting when you start looking at it, it's like, well, then ether and Nyx have Eros. And, of course, that, you know, kind of adds to another thing in the question of on that. So you've got a lot of different ways they look at how the deity came into effect, what they are, you know, cosmic, you know, egg, hatched, you know, and all this energy. And, of course, when you come down to that process, it, you know, you have to keep an open mind, number one. You know, you have Romans that sort of decided, I found that one fascinating. I'm not going to go into everything, but, you know, the hygienia of how, again, hygienia being the Roman point here, is he goes with night and dias, so it's nox and dias and Erebus, and he basically then says, well, the offspring, ether's offspring, become all these different versions, and you get, you know, Terra and, you know, all the, and then they go down. And it's like he kind of becomes the head of everything. He and Terra sort of become like the parents of everything you could possibly think of. So, you know, it depends on, again, how you view, what you feel comfortable with. But ultimately, ether is this bright, upper sky, be, you know, like an in-breath, like it's the breath, the energy of the, you know, it even talks about it's the breath of the gods. Ether is the breath of the gods. It is what they, you know, what they can breathe. And then, you know, of course, we, you know, take it to the more human level, and, you know, it is equivalent to air, which again goes to sky. So that's where it is. I'm going to turn it over to you now and see what you have to say about ether.
ether, you know, it's funny. I was talking to my sister yesterday, and, you know, I said, oh, you know, she's like, well, what are you guys going to talk about on the next show? And I'm like, we're going to talk about the deity, the primordial deity, ether. And she's like, oh, no. I said, we're going to talk about ether. And she said, the drug? I'm like, no, not bad ether. The primordial deity.
God.
And so, so anyway, I, you know, I sometimes I can find a lot of the mythology a little confusing because there are different sources. But I think that most of the sources agree that they're in personified form. Was the primordial god of light and the breaking ether of the heavens. And so we know that he was one of the first primordials. And I always think of the deities, you know, in Greek mythology as three grand generations. Like first there were the primordials, you know, then came the Titans, and then came the Olympians. And, you know, like you were saying, I think most sources say that, you know, Aether's parents were Erebos, the god of darkness, and Nyx, the goddess of night. Now, you would think these two, you know, dark and night, that they wouldn't create this brightness, but there it is. But then, like, there's other sources that say that his parents were Kronos, the god of time, and Caligo, I think, is also darkness. So I kind of scanned over some of the mythology and got just the real basics because, I don't know, sometimes with, if I start reading a bunch of different sources, I actually start getting myself confused. But so just looking at Aether personified, we know that he was one of the first, you know, and is this made up of this primordial energy. And one thing that I saw is that he was described as there was one of the three heirs. So the middle heir was chaos, a colorless mist which enveloped the mortal world. And then the lower air was Erebos, the mist of darkness, which enveloped the dark places beneath the earth in the underworld or the realm of the dead. And then the third air was the upper air or ether, you know, and that's the mist of that blue heavenly ether and was the air of light. And that enveloped the mountain peaks and the clouds and the stars and the sun and the moon. And then I also saw that the deity, there's female Ra, with an A-E in front of it, or maybe it's pronounced Aethra. But she was described as a titaness of the clear blue sky. And so I'm thinking, because she's not a primordial, she's described as a titan, that she must have come after Aether. But she is considered the mother of the sun and the moon. So I think the other thing that I saw was that in the evening, the mother Nyx, she would draw her dark veil across the sky, obscuring the ether and bringing night. And so she was always there, but then she would, you know, come and cover him. Making night and day. Another thing I saw was in the ancient cosmology, night and day were regarded as elements separate from the sun. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But one of the things that I liked just with the description, and you mentioned Hyginus and Hesiod, And one of the things that I saw with that I really liked a lot is that in the ancient accounts, they show that in the Greek cosmology, ether was considered as one of the elementary substances of which the universe was formed. And so, you know, if I think of that, there's so many different things I think that apply to that. You know, even just being like an energy worker, you think of what we channel is the universal energy. And it comes about in so many different, you know, different things. One last thing that I would add is in the Orphic hymns. I love this. I thought it was very beautiful. It says, "There appears as the soul of the world from which all life emanates, an idea which was also adopted by some of the early philosophers of Greece." And so, you know, then in later times, ether was regarded as the white space of heaven. But I love that thought that ether appears as the soul of the world. And is it present in everybody and in everything? Yeah.
Well, we are coming close. Yes, and I think we'll probably have a lot more because you're going to start off after our, you know, our commercial break. But I know we're close enough to, you know, we don't have to do it right this minute. But I just wanted to, you know, say yes. You know, you the fact that ether is in such a way this incredible energy that we channel, and it's, you know, the universal energy. We've called it a lot of things. But truthfully, at this point, taking it and saying ether, and I know, again, second half we'll be talking about it, magical and spiritual work and things of that nature. But I think it's beautiful. I really do. And I think at this point we are going to break away to our commercial. So Nagashiva, break us away.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All times specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
Well, I'm just going to say, Deb, take it away from here.
Sure. In this second half, I kind of would like to focus on there not so much as his sonification of ether, but more looking at ether as the elementary substance, or looking at ether as the spirit or the soul of the world, and also seeing ether as the fifth element. So in ancient Greek philosophy and mythology, ether was considered to be both a primordial deity and also the fifth element. And so in addition to the, you know, our familiar four elements of earth, air, fire, and water, there was thought to be a unique, rarefied, and like divine substance or energy that filled the region of the universe above the terrestrial. So the origins of this line of thought has to do with ether being associated with the heavens and celestial bodies, like the stars and the planets. But it was also believed to be like the substance that was like the breath of the divine source, which made up all of the heavenly bodies and everything else. So, so we see ether is, you know, seen also as this primordial energy flow of spirit and as kind of like a pure, uncorruptible substance. Unlike the terrestrial elements that are subject to change and decay. So it's very like incorruptibility and purity that made it like a fitting element to symbolize the aspects of the cosmos being brought into being. And so, you know, by the emanations of the word or air, breath, of the divine source and making it really an element of transcendence and spirit. And so I see the energy of ether, it's like the element that unifies the cosmos and it permeates and connects all things in the universe. And so this fifth element of ether is really a very unifying element and linked both like the terrestrial and the celestial realms. So in 1995, Scott Cunningham, a Wiccan author, used the ether to describe the element of spirit and proposed that all of the other elements descended from it. And so many pagans do interpret the fifth element of Akasha to be a combination of all the elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And it is with that element of spirit that many believe that, you know, that permeates all of magic and all of, you know, all of the spiritual work that we do. And so Wiccan rituals, kind of we cast a circle by calling in the four directions and the four elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And then many, you know, not everybody does, but many practitioners will also call in the fifth or the like the unifying element of ether, also known as Akasha or spirit. And they will usually call that into the center of the circle that has been cast. Mm-hmm. And I... At this point, I wrote it as a poem, but I've used it in ritual. And it's not a rhyming poem, but I included it in my book, Witch's Brew. And so I'm just going to read it off here because I think it's a good one to just, you know, symbolize the connection of all of that. So I'll just start off here. I am earth, element of nature, gatekeeper of the north. I am of dirt beneath feet, the language of trees, and a flower in spring. I am air, element of thought, gatekeeper of the east, animating worlds and tracing pleasure, lost naked flesh, a shudder so inspired. I am water, element of intuition, gatekeeper of the west, blood and life force, powerful and vast, and cleansing as the fallen rain, and deep, filled vessel. I am fire, element of passion, gatekeeper of the south, and revelry, crackle and heat, penetrating as tongue, trembling mouth, hungry and ecstatic. I am Akasha, element of ether and spirit, gatekeeper of the core, the essence of all. Circle of energy flows through the entrance to mystery's door. Secrets flow through each particle of space and time. Formation of connection of infinity. So, I wrote that like years, years ago, and I just thought, oh, I should recite that in the show.
You must have been reading my mind. I was sitting here hoping that you had some kind of home or thing that was, you know, going to be brought in, because a lot of times you and I talk about things, but then we bring our own stuff to it. So thank you. Wow.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I just, I love writing. I love, playing with words. And I think a lot of witches do like playing with words and, making their own incantations or ritual calls and stuff like that. And it just, gives us a good chance to put pen to paper and see like how we connect to each of the elements and how we can connect to the ether. Where you call each of the four quarters and you go into the center of the circle. And I always kind of see it as a hologram. I see it like, there's the four quarters around me and then above me and below me, I connect with, there, and below me I connect with Gaia or the earth. And it just, it's a good feeling. And lots of times when I'm working magic or doing other types, pretty much any type of magical work, sometimes I will just visualize or feel that whole hologram of energy around me. And that element of ether, spirit, Akasha, whatever we call it, it just, it can be very, it's very powerful. I mean, it's so pervasive that it's really hard to talk about it in one little compartment. Because it's very like nice. That, yeah, it's like the primary force of creation. And I believe it has, even though we describe ether as male, as a male deity, it's, that primary force of creation, I believe, probably does not have the same polarities and dualities of the other elements. Where earth and water are traditionally seen as feminine, and while fire and air are seen as masculine. But spirit, I think, kind of encompasses all. Yeah. And and a lot of people believe that the four elements spring from that fifth element and combine to create, or that the four elements combine to create this fifth element. But I think that the fifth element, or ether, kind of like energizes and galvanizes the other elements. So even like with the this fifth element of ether or Akasha is the center of the four-quartered circle, but it's also the top point of the pentagram. And I think that can be very powerful when we draw, the pentacles as we're doing circle, and then we do, the center one for Akasha. They each start at different points, and Akasha is the top point. Yeah, and so, and I think lots of times when we talk about spirit, we often think about individual spirits, but the element of spirit kind of goes beyond that. It encompasses all. I view the fire element as the spark of the individual spirit, which is sometimes called the soul. But the element of spirit is so much more than our individual souls. And it really is the sum of all all souls, like past, present, future, and future potentials. And some, you know, and some people might associate the word spirit as going beyond and differentiate between the little s spirit and then the big s spirit, as being the source or the all or the creator or divine mind or whatever you want to call it. But if we see the source as the totality of all expressions of life in all levels, then the element of spirit would be greater. But it would also just be a part of the creative spirit. So we might wonder what that would be. And I think that's where, you know, some traditions will give it a, you know, a specific name like Akasha, which is really from Sanskrit word meaning primary substance. And is, or in Hinduism, is there in the upper sky.
Right.
But in both cases, I think it's considered like the essence of all things.
Well, it's interesting.
How about,
oh, well, I was going to bring in physics because, of course, you know, you've got all these spiritual things that we're talking about. But you know that physics actually, and I know we talked about, you know, you mentioned what your sister was talking about in terms of an actual, you know, drug, but it comes from, you know, the 19th century where it was the theoretical universal substance. But, and this is what got me, is that when I was looking at it, it basically is a medium for the transmission of electromagnetic waves, which when we talk about Reiki and we talk about energy work, we're doing. That is what, you know, in essence, we are moving this particular energy in that form. And I thought, well, that kind of puts it as it's a together process rather than a separate process of, you know, well, that becomes spiritual. It's only spiritual. Well, it does, whether it has a way to define it in our physical terms, like quantitative. I do this, it does that, and I can measure it in this way. But it is still happening with or without being able to measure it. I found it, you know, incredible. And the fact that, and this is what got me, they also talk about, well, what chakra is it? You know, this kind of comes a little bit, you know, when you're talking from physics, you go into, you know, the Hindu tradition. And it is basically, the chakra is the throat chakra because it's about sound, all right? And it was talking about, you know, expression and, you know, the common, you know, like it's the cosmos's voice, so to speak. And then it kind of gave the next one, and I thought this was, you know, going to stir up a lot of stuff. The middle finger represents ether. All right. Now, we all know what the middle finger, and it's the middle finger, and the reason, now, this is, they gave the reason. We have taken it to a different level.
Oh, you're just making that up, Elvira.
No, I'm really not. I was just sitting here going, it's the middle finger. But it's because it's the finger of power, balance, and stability. Because when you would wear a ring, it was the one you saw the most of. It was the most powerful. So you put it on that finger. It's more about you see it. It's, well, think about it. It's the bigger finger that you carry in your hand. So it's going to, if you've got a ring on it, you're going to look at it. Well, you know, obviously we've taken it to another level when we say we give people the finger. But I was just, I went, wow. You know, and again, I'm not familiar with some of the more Catholic traditions where, you know, the bishops and the Pope and everybody put their ring on for the power ring. But I would probably do a little more, you know, investigation. But I was, I went, okay, and at first I thought the same thing. I was looking at this going, but it's all working in a yogic, Ayurvedic website that I was, you know, looking at, and I'm going, well, you're not a fakey website, so I can't quite justify it being a dummy thing to do. But it was very kind of, oh, but it was the fact that we're talking about something that, whether it's physics or it's you know, from traditions of ancient times or more modern spiritual times or whatever. It is something that this energy is, it can be worked and moved in a way that you can do these things, you know, about, you know, passing a circle, doing magical rituals, or doing spell work that you infuse with this energy, or, you know, all of these levels. It is there, of course, because it's energy. It's not, you know, you have to figure, well, can we measure it? You know, because humans like to measure things. They like to feel that we know it. It has something substantial. We can say, well, it's this, this, and this, and we know it's real. But I kept thinking about that, and I'm gonna do it now, because then I'm gonna give you back the floor. But every time I hear the fifth element, I'm sorry, I hear the movie,
right?
The Fifth Element, obviously with Bruce Willis and you know, the whole thing. But
I
if you remember
movie.
The very I do too. Oh, at the very end, you have you know, Bruce holding the girl, and then she throws her head back, and then out comes the light, you know, the universal energy to connect, and thus it does, you know, the connection, and then it stop, you know, it comes back, and it stops the whole catastrophe from happening. And I just think of that as a graphic way, in a more story-like form, of what the myths and things were about the different deities calling upon ether, the high level primordial god, whether or deity, we'll call it that, it gives it no gender, and you think about that, and so it even in our more modern versions of what we put out, we still believe it. So now I'm going to turn it back to you, give you a few more minutes here before we have to do our closing. Do you have, you know, any other things you want to talk about?
That elements, you know, of spirit, it's trying to put a name to the unnameable in a way. It's like something that we can more feel and sense. You know, it's not something that we can just see. But I think that, you know, well, it's another little form of pop culture is even with the word Akasha. Anne Rice's character in Queen of the Dam was named Akasha, just as an aside.
Okay.
But most of us, when we hear Akasha, we associate that with the Akashic Records. And so that's kind of known as like the Grand Cosmic Library of infinite information and wisdom of all that is and all that has been in the past, present, and future. And it is recorded within the spiritual elements of Akasha. And if you think of that, which we're saying with the air, the breath, and you think of that as like breath is usually, or air is usually correlated with mental energy. And that would make a lot of sense that all of that information would be contained within that element or that energy, that primordial energy. So I think that there, you know, it ether, that energy of that life force, I think it contains all of the elements and all of the underlying patterns of creation, and that it kind of permeates and sustains all levels of, and it has a lot of different names, but I think it is all, goes right back to ether, you know, whether we call it prana, mana, chi, reiki. one name that I thought was kind of interesting is alchemists call this energy quintessence. And so, and the root word is quin, you know, so that's five. And so if you think of the fifth element, and it's, you know, thought of, according to ancient alchemists, is the first matter, or the creative chaos from which all things have manifested. And so I think in any ritual, spirit is at the center of the circle. In witchcraft, we use a lot of symbols. And the pentacle within the circle, because the circle and the pentagram are both excellent symbols for spirit. And also symbolizes the four traditional elements. Another one is the eight-spoked wheel. And that is another real simple one, but also a very profound symbol of spirit, because it represents no one season or time, but rather all seasons and all time.
Mm-hmm.
And just for a couple of little last correlations is in the tarot, the major arcana with the Fool's Journey of spiritual initiation really represents spirit and the fifth element. And because it's like that, on that Fool's Journey, that's where we reach enlightenment and awakening. And so I think that's a wonderful way just to think of it and to see how it symbolizes through the fifth element that we end up realizing our connection to everything. And one last thing I'll say is, like, imperfect love and imperfect trust is how we usually enter, like, the witch's circle. And that state represents, like, an unconditional love, comes from being in balance with all of the elements without and within ourselves, and aligned, you know, with the higher self, which is directly connected to the fifth element. So there's a lot of stuff in witchcraft for, you know, the fifth element is within everything.
Mm-hmm.
Our magic, within our ritual.
Yeah,
and I think,
Well, you know, one of the interesting things you were talking, it's funny, our conversations, you know, when we start doing our shows and after we've talked it out, but you come up with things, and you were talking about, you know, the universal energy, and all of a sudden, my father was a Reichian therapist, and Wilhelm Reich was very much a renegade at the time that he was, you know, doing what he was doing, and he was a student of Freud's, but then he kind of branched out. Well, he talked about this universal life force. And he kept talking about universal life force. And then he named it, and, you know, you were giving names, and it was orgone energy. And so, you know, with that, it was about the breath and using the breath and putting that in and going with that. And because it was more intellectual and more, you know, into the, you know, a healing modality that was an offshoot of a mind modality. I've been sitting here with you talking about this, and my brain is just going, oh, my God, look at this. Look at what's happened. You know, because I grew up in this, and for me it was, you know, what I knew, and have subsequently that was part of when I went on my journey to expand my knowledge. But it all comes down to this incredibly, you know, universal process, and we were talking, you know, the unconditional thing. I know you too.
I was just going to say, I bet your dad is smiling at you right now.
He a long time ago, before he did pass, his one comment was he wished he was younger so he could work with me, and to me that was the highest compliment and statement my father could make, because I was of the children, the rebel. I took everything he, you know, it was kind of like he said, don't go into theater. I went into theater. Just don't do this. I did the other thing. That was, you know, but this was something that, you know, put all of it together and added this other part. And I was just, I'm like, oh, my goodness. And, you know, we talk about that as, you know, part of it. Now, I am going to say something before we do our exiting, because I think we have like five more minutes, is I had a chance to do something this last week, and it was to do a fair, and I chose not to, but the reason I chose not to is I was being asked if I would work at a booth that was the Cheetos booth, and they were going to do, they wanted a reader to read this deck. Now, the deck was the Cheetos deck, based on Cheetos as the theme, and it was the 22 major arcana, and I kind of had this, like, I can't do that, it's not a sideshow, but when we talk about the, you know, the different decks, I know we've got plenty out there that are very unusual and very offbeat, and I might not like them, but I think it was the context of what they were trying to do more than anything. But there is a Cheetos deck out there, people. I just don't know how you would get it, but there is one. And I may try to locate it to see what it actually is.
Will it make our fingers orange, though?
I suspect it will.
Right?
So this point, it was, I don't know, I wanted to add a laugh to the whole process because, you know, we've discussed all these different things, and you did end with the Fool as the tarot deck, and we both are, you know, we do tarot readings, so obviously I just was unable to pass this up to make that a new deck out there. Just, you know, see what it's like, people. I don't know, so I am unable to give any real references. But it, you know, may become the newest hot deck to get. So, you know, there you go. But I do need to start making our moment of transition here. I know I just keep looking. Yeah. What we have for next week is our next topic. We'll be working with angels and archangels. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm sure we will have a lot to say about that. And then if you want to get in touch with either of us, both Deb and I can be found on readersandrootworkers.org or the hoodoopsychics.com websites. Deb can be found at bewitching.com, and that's bewitchingbee.com. And I can be found at milk, M-I-L-K, -AND-HONEY.com, or Elvira, ELVYRA.com. I know I like to consider myself really interesting, and the Elvira, Mistress of the Darkness, does come up at a great rate, but I am the one with the Y, and both of us are in Central Time Zone, so at this point, I think we're not really close, but we do have a few more minutes, so, or a minute or two, and I think at this point, I do see that we have, I'm trying to think, we don't have any more, do you have any festivals you'll be at in the next month?
No, I am not in a festival until Pagan Pride, which is in August. So, yeah, we're a little bit away from that, but yeah.
Okay, so basically we're ready to go ahead and take our farewells. I will say have a wonderful week and scamper off to wherever.
Yay.
And I will let you do our exiting statements, my dear.
Yay! Yes. Till next time, everybody, witch on, witch well, and witch wisely.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.